My name is Victor Kubik, President of the United Church of God. Welcome to Inside United. Our guest today is Justin Palm. He's one of our editors, proofreaders. He's a senior writer for Beyond Today. We'll continue our discussion from last time, which was about fake news and how do we deal with it and how can we cope with it. But today we'll continue in part two about what are some of the rules that we can have or suggestions that we can subscribe to help us to avoid fake news. Anyway, welcome to Inside United.
It's good to be back.
Good to have you. Let's continue our discussion about fake news. Since you deal with news in analyzing here for our publications, there is so much fear about the coronavirus, for example. Justin, give us your take on this.
Well, the coronavirus is a perfect example of the kind of misinformation that's out there on the internet and how hard it is to figure out what's actually going on. One of the factors is that it obviously originated in China, an authoritarian country, and they have a very strong lockdown on what they release, and they have their own spin, and their facts are not always the full picture that some people would like. So that's one of the factors, is that the origination of the virus was from China, and it's hard to get information about what exactly happened with the initial outbreak. And then the other factor is just the internet and people sharing stories and articles that from sources that may not be official sources. I think a couple weeks ago, there started to be a lot stronger push to get people to go straight to the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, and also the federal officials in the United States and the World Health Organization. Just go to those direct, you know, sources for news. Don't go to other places because you're going to get a filtered or skewed version of what's really going on.
And what happens is that people can make decisions in mobs that could affect the economy, that could affect financial stability. Our stock market has been swinging 1,000 points plus or minus day by day.
Yes.
Because people don't know what to do.
Yes, yeah. There's a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of misinformation, but it's just hard to know exactly what's going on, how to approach something like this. Obviously, the potential is there for a very severe and fatal outbreak, for it to continue to get worse and worse, and it also has the potential to just die back down again. So at this point, we just still don't know exactly what's going to happen, but we're seeing the kinds of reactions that are happening now where people, it's having a very real impact. You were saying earlier about conferences being canceled, Amazon and other places. I think caution obviously is the key, and then also just if people are very concerned about it and want to know what they can do in their own personal lives, to go to the sources like the CDC and the World Health Organization.
You know, the coronavirus is obviously very real, and it could develop into something really big over here in the U.S. But I was trying to find the kind of where all the misinformation first started, just speaking to the relevance that this has to the topic of fake news. And I remember, like, right now, what the narrative seems to be is that Democrats are saying that Trump thinks this is a hoax. He thinks that the coronavirus is being blown out of proportion and it's a hoax by everybody, or by the left. And the left is obviously saying that that's not true. Here he is, you know, politicizing this very real threat, and this is a time for all of us to get together. And that seems to be the, I guess, the main miscommunication that's happening right now. That's the way that it's being reported on now. We're no longer talking about the facts of the coronavirus. We're talking about, you know, Trump's mishandling of it, where if you actually look at the quote, that was from a rally that he was holding in South Carolina, and he was responding to some people on the left who had called, they basically want to call this the Trump virus. And they're saying that his organization has handled this in the worst way possible. And they're not trying to fix it. And he was calling that the hoax. So if you actually look at what he's responding to, he's not saying the virus itself is a hoax. It's the idea that the Trump administration isn't treating it like a legitimate threat. This is a great example, I think, of gaslighting, because
can you maybe explain gaslighting to our listeners?
Gaslighting is basically when a crazy person is trying to convince you that you're crazy for thinking they're crazy. So you're basically trying to flip the roles. So it's, you know, you think I'm crazy. No, you're crazy because blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
This is a pretty good example of that, because you have the Democrats accusing Trump of the very thing that they're doing. So they're accusing him of politicizing this and not taking it seriously, where they're the ones who are trying to rename it the Trump virus because he's not taking it seriously and everything. Where if you actually look at the relationship that he's had with the CDC and the initiative that he's put together to get a handle on this very quickly, they keep calling it an aggressive response. If you look at that, you realize that he's responded to it as well, if not a little better than previous administrations have dealt with, you know, similar kinds of outbreaks.
Yeah, it was interesting how people are politicizing it is actually making it harder to cut through now about what's actually going on, because it's become a political weapon that each side is using against each other, as opposed to actually there's lives at stake, and we want to get to the bottom of what can we do as just an average citizen to avoid getting sick.
Yeah. So you got to think about the people who don't want to, you know, spend 5 hours of their day just trying to figure out what they can trust. You got to think about the people who are just like, okay, what does this mean? Should I, you know, stay locked up in my house? Can I go outside? Like, should I travel?
Go to the grocery store?
Yeah, you got to think about those people who are just, they're actually relying on your information.
And that's where we'd like to kind of get into this podcast here to talk about how to deal with news that is outrageous.
We're drowning in this information, and it's hard to sift through, you know, what is good and what is true and what's not true. We focused a lot on the problem in part one, and now part two, I've got a lot of different things that I use to go through to avoid fake news. And hopefully we can be solution-oriented in this podcast. We can give people some meat to chew on.
And of course, you know, we're not biased.
No. Well, yes.
In one sense, you know, we try to find the truth, and people say, yeah, sure, you know, what is truth? But I do believe that person who is truly seeking truth, and when Jesus Christ said, your word is truth, and answering the response to Pilate before Jesus, you know, what is truth? I do believe that you can find it if you want it in your heart.
Yes, definitely. And if you put in the time and the work, and if you keep an open mind and you don't make snap decisions, you can find, get to the bottom of the issues and kind of get to the heart of the matter.
A lot of people don't have time to do all that kind of stuff.
No.
You know, but they look to a news aggregator. You know, I have these little things that kind of summarize the news from several different sources real quick. And in 30 seconds to a minute and a half, I find out what's going on. I find out if the world is still here, if the stock market's crashed. You know, basically have binary answers to survival first and then get into softer stuff.
Yes. But I actually don't spend that much time reading the news every day. I spend very little time in my day reading the news, because it can be, it's just a black hole. Like you said, I probably spend maybe 5 or 10 minutes in the morning kind of getting a sample of what's going on, or what are the topics that are look like going to be covered today, or maybe what happened overnight. And then a little bit at the end of the day, and then that's it. I enjoy my evening. I don't spend, 4 hours watching, TV to try to get a handle
it's
on
people
everything.
Shouting at one another.
Exactly.
It's people trying to say cute things to undermine the other.
Yeah, so I've covered now my 15th rule and my 13th rule, but I'll go back to the number one rule. Start from the beginning. Okay. But the first thing I do is I just look at the publication name first. It's easy to get caught up in fake stories sometimes if you just are moving too fast. But I find if it's something I've never heard of, then it's an immediate red flag to take it with a really big grain of salt, because you just don't know the source of where it's coming from. So number one, I look at the publication name first. Number two, I also think then about who owns it. A perfect example, probably the best example, is the Washington Post newspaper is owned by Amazon's Jeff Bezos. So there's an immediate kind of filter that I put certain things through. Not that the Washington Post should be painted with a bad brush or anything, but knowing the ownership, is it an edit? Is it some of the newspapers are owned by, venture capitalist funds now, which are just, they have really no vested interest except for making money. So that's another thing to think about. But kind of having a general idea of who owns it is a good way to kind of understand where the what the information, where it's kind of coming from. So number two, just seeing who owns it is a good rule to follow. Number three, looking at the date. If it's an old article and we think it's new, it can have a completely different feel. So number three, looking at the date. If it's really old, it's probably old news. It's probably not something that you really need to worry about, especially if it's a health study. You know, for decades, butter was evil and all these things. So some of those health studies and other things, you just keep in mind the date when it was published. And things move so fast, too. So this month it's March. But if something even was from October and it had to do with some kind of trend, sometimes that is already old news just after a couple of months. So I always look at the date to get a sense of it. So that's number three. Number four, looking at the author, just kind of getting a sense of who they are. You know, if sometimes it's an opinion piece and it looks online like it's just a normal journalist article or something, and it's someone who is sometimes in a very upfront way saying, this is my opinion and this is really how I think we should feel about this matter, and they're maybe biased, but they're open about their bias if it's an opinion piece. But then if you take it as a news story, that's where sometimes you can get burned.
Yeah, I don't know if they still have, there was always the editorial page.
Still do, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, there was the front page that we assumed was the truth. Then there was the editorial page where you had different authors, different writers that expressed their opinion, the op-ed.
And online, it's harder to differentiate that now. It's harder to see it. So I look at number four. I look at the name, the author. Who are they? And one example of an article I quoted last time was this one in The Guardian, and it was about the collapse of the information ecosystem that posing profound risks for humanity. And it's a good article, but then one thing I didn't touch on last time I wanted to bring in now was it's written by Lydia Polgreen. And if you look at the bottom, she was the editor-in-chief of Huffington Post. And then she spent, the award-winning journalist who spent 15 years editing and reporting for the New York Times. So she was editor-in-chief of Huffington Post, and it's just good to know that's who's saying these views about it, because she's more than just a normal journalist on the ground reporting the facts as they see them. And she actually does have a section in here where she's pushing kind of an agenda about about advertising dollars and Facebook and Google, and she's really pushing an idea that she has to better things. But just good to know those things. Not that she's wrong or that it's, you know, false news or anything, but it's just good to know the biases of who exactly is this person who's writing the article. And then five, this is one that's hard to do, but most of the time I read the entire article. So if there's something that I want to know about, and if something is in front of me and it looks like it's important or something that I should know, I try to force myself to read the whole article.
Even if it's written in inverted pyramid style, you know, where the important stuff is up front.
But there's still some
stuff at the end, though.
Yes. A lot of times there actually is good stuff that they bury at the bottom. But what I found, the way the internet works, it's just too easy. The exception becomes the rule. And then all we do is skim. All I ever do is just skim. And they've done all kinds of studies about people who grew up with the internet now, and they're just so skilled at skimming. They just know what to look for. But you can get burned because, number one, you're moving too quickly. And number two, you're just not even reading the whole thing. You're not getting the whole sense of the picture. So
you kind of go for the bullets. You look for how it's laid out. And if it's got bullets anywhere there, I go
those
right
are
to
easy.
Bullets.
I know those are
do the
good.
Easy stuff first.
And sometimes those are, if it's something, if you're looking at the, trying to, like even with the coronavirus, if you're trying to find, okay, what are the new countries, or what is the latest death toll, or how many people are infected, you can skim that and see, okay, these are the latest stats you're looking for. But if it's something where I'm trying to understand, you know, something about politics or something about who said something or who did something, I will force myself to just read the whole article, take the time, because oftentimes it's only a 3-minute, you know, most articles only take 2 or 3 minutes to read. And it's just a good habit to have where you're reading the whole article. So that's my fifth rule. Number six, it's hard to know online what the difference is sometimes, but I look for real news organizations and not aggregators. There's nothing wrong with using an aggregation app where it compiles, you know, NPR or New York Times and Wall Street Journal into one place and shows you the different articles. But some websites and blogs are actually, they don't have any journalists on staff, and they're just regurgitating and recompiling news articles. And then oftentimes you'll have opinion stuff thrown in there. You'll have bloggers who are posting their opinions about things. And it just, if you're on a site that's not a reputable news organization, you can pretty quickly get into trouble with some of the fake news.
Now, I've been disappointed with some of the big news names, namely CNN. That's all I used to watch, would you believe? I think they were one of the first ones. They were out of Atlanta. They're out of Atlanta. And when I lived
I've been to the headquarters there.
Yes. That's quite impressive.
Yeah.
And they were some of the very first cable people, and you watched it. And, of course, CNN is overseas, is really, really big, you know, unlike Fox. But I used to watch that, and I got attracted to some of the presenters, to some of the, you know, news people. And I would watch this guy at 8 o'clock, watch that person at 9 o'clock. But now they've become so biased, and they've become even antagonistic, and right to the point of sedition almost towards towards the government in hate speech, which is very, very sad to have an organization that has responsible people saying those things, whether it be on the right or the left. When you are public, you need to consider the fact that it is public. There's all kinds of people. And if we have a democracy where we try to be fair, we shouldn't be like a propaganda organization like in Germany or in Russia that promotes one, you know, one point of view.
Yeah, that's a good point. There is a lot of bias, you know, with CNN as one of the probably one of the bigger cases of that.
And, you know, I look upon those journalists. They're very, very smart. They have journalistic degrees. They're good writers. They're clever. They look good. But I just feel sad that they can't have a higher integrity about the way that they present information.
There's a big difference in my mind with fake news and then just bias. You know, there's a lot of bias out there, but even with a website or an TV network like CNN, you're not always going to get straight false news that's just 100% false. It's just going to be very biased. So part of it is
leave out very, very important.
Leave out omission. They'll use the omission to get their point across. Number seven, one of the rules I use, the seventh, is don't shy away from reputable big news companies just because they are biased. And I don't think that it's really, you know, it's healthy or balanced to only read sources that agree with my viewpoints. And I think even with CNN, you were saying you don't completely tune them out now. You still will watch CNN or follow them, but you can see some of the things that they're pushing. But you don't completely cut them off. You still see them, and you still, I remember you were saying in Hong Kong, you were watching, there's some of the riots on CNN. My go-to source is still the New York Times, just because they've as an institution, they've been around for, you know, more than 100 years, well over 100 years, and they've been seen as the paper of record, and they definitely have a bias. You know, they definitely have an agenda that they're pushing, but it is not that hard to see the bias. And so, you know, when I get, I still read the hard copy newspaper, and when I get the newspaper, there's sections, like you said, the front page is usually anti-Trump, and I just skip past it. It's not, it's not hard for me to do. It doesn't take a lot of time out of my day just to turn the page. And then I go to the other international news that's going on. The thing about New York Times, I think what I learned a few years ago, and I think people don't fully understand, is that as far as newspapers go, they, from my understanding, they have the greatest number of journalists on the ground in other countries. And what happens is when a newspaper is making cuts, they'll oftentimes they'll have a reporter in Afghanistan. They'll say, well, it's too expensive to have you there. We need to bring you back. And then what ends up happening is the newspaper doesn't have anyone on the ground in Sudan or in Afghanistan. And then you have to start relying on either the news sources there or the government talking points. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we all know how those can be kind of missing some key points. So the New York Times is still committed and they have the resources to put people on the ground in these different countries and different regions where they're actually going, you know, in Mexico City, and they're going to different places, digging up news and trying to get to the bottom of what's going on. So there's a lot of reasons I still look to the New York Times as kind of a number one source, but that's one of them. And there's other reasons too, but it's not the only thing I read, and there's a lot of mm-hmm. bias that I just skip past. They're very much pushing, obviously, the LGBTQ agenda, and mm-hmm. it's easy to see that and just skip past it. Or sometimes it's good to read about it and understand mm-hmm. what's going on mm-hmm. and what are the trends that are out there. But the Wall Street Journal is a good source as well. The Atlantic Magazine has a reputation of showing both sides of a story. And they'll have one writer. They just did one a couple months ago. They did the whole issue was about kind of the polarization in America. And they did pretty much one half the magazine was kind of the right wing agenda, kind of that talking, you know, the perspective from Republicans. And then the other half of the magazine was like the more the liberal perspective. And they had showing both of those. And they weren't just pushing one mm-hmm. story.
What is their bias, by the way?
The Atlantic, they seem to be very committed to hiring good people, good journalists, mm-hmm. good writers who dig to the bottom of things. And it's hard to know if they mm-hmm. really have. I'm sure people have more information about the Atlantic specifically than I do, but it's hard to know. But mm-hmm. they seem very committed to having discussions on both mm-hmm. sides.
Now, it's interesting, too, that when somebody goes to journalism school, they teach them the rules of journalism. You know, you have more than one source. You have to have confirmation.
Yes, yes.
And then when you do the news, you say, here's what we know.
Yes.
Here's what we do know at this point.
Yes.
And it sounds like it's just, you know, they're just very, very unbiasedly receiving this data mm-hmm. and they're saying it. Mm-hmm. But knowing our human nature, we all are that way, we will only tell the story as we want it.
Yes, the confirmation bias.
I think that's a good time to mention that bias isn't always synonymous with dishonesty. Whenever I'm looking for a reliable news source, I tend to trust the ones that are more upfront with their biases. If they say, like, look, I'm a conservative reporter or I'm a Democrat reporter, if they say that outright, that wins a lot of credibility with me because I'm not looking for the catch. I'm not looking for the snake oil pitch or anything like that. Like, they're upfront with, like, look, I hate Trump, and there's going to be some language in here that says that I don't like Trump. But, you know, these are the things that happened, and this is what was said. I tend to gravitate towards stuff like that a little bit more. And I think when it gets dishonest is when they pretend that they don't have a bias. Like, kind of my big issue with Fox for a long time was just the tagline, fair and balanced, mm-hmm. where that is contrary, where if you bring up the fact that they're biased, you know, if they have a conservative bias, everyone always says, well, yeah, they're a reaction to CNN and MSNBC and stuff like that. And I agree with that. But then that means that their tagline is dishonest. It's not mm-hmm. fair and balanced. It is, you know, unless I guess you look at it that they mm-hmm. are trying to be
reactive and protective.
Yeah, yeah. Reactive and protective. Yeah. So
they're balancing out the other side.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point about the bias. If it's up front, it's a lot easier to see through a lot of times if mm-hmm. they're actually being honest about their bias.
To me, it's so interesting when the president gives a State of the Union speech. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have all these people out there with college degrees. Most of them are lawyers, you know. And if they're Republican or Democrat, the president says something, you know, the Republicans stand up and cheer.
I know.
Democrat just sit there glum.
Yeah.
And Nancy Pelosi's tearing up
his papers. Yeah, I know. It's...
And then, you know, the president says something else and everybody leaps to their feet over mm-hmm. and over again. And then when Barack Obama was president, it was the opposite.
It was the opposite. I know.
Yeah. The Republicans sat there kind of glum while the Democrats leaped to
Which is always feet. A bad look for the opposite party, because I mean, this year with Trump's State of the Union address, he's citing off good facts, and he even like gives an honor to the last surviving Tuskegee Airmen, and they're all sitting there on their cell phones with their arms crossed, and they're all grumpy. I'm like, the optics in this are pretty bad.
Yeah.
You need to at least, you know, join in on the honor of this man.
And character has been declining because when, you know, the Speaker of the House, you know, tore up the papers, there was no conscience about it. She said it was the proper thing to do. I said, is this the kind of values that, you know, this is so dishonorable? I mean, I know that I have felt one way about presidents, felt another way, but you always show honor the king.
Yes.
And they're the ones who are taking that role for that period of time, and you show that honor. And I believe that fake news is actually is a factor in a declining morality, truth morality of our country.
Oh, definitely.
Because if they're not telling the truth, why should you tell the truth?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can also go out there, and when they say something outrageous, you need something outrageous on the opposite end to get your side across.
Yes, definitely. Well, Chaz, you mentioned the bias of being up front, and that kind of leads into the eighth rule I have here is go to the first source to see what the original study or quote or video or the person actually says. So what will often happen is the United Nations will release an annual report about human trafficking, and then other news sites will obviously pick up on it, and then they'll do their own reporting, and then it will have sometimes an agenda or a spin on it. Well, one thing that I do is I will just go to the original United Nations report. It's easy to find online, and they often have a cover sheet, an executive summary, that you get. I'll get a lot more information right from that source than I would ever get from a different article reporting on it.
Right.
And that's actually another thing that I was going to say was that if the primary way that you get your news is just scrolling through Facebook and seeing what's on your wall, probably the most useful and easiest thing that you can do, because most of the misinformation is misquoting things. Mm-hmm. You know, what we already talked about with the Trump's quote about the Democratic hoax. And by the way, I'm not trying to say that he's the only one who gets misquoted. I remember specifically back in 2016 when Obama was, I forget where he was speaking, but it was around the time of September 11th. And there was a quote going around by Obama that we deserve 9/11 because we didn't show proper respect to the Islamic nation. And that ended up being not a misquote, a complete fabrication.
Yeah.
Like never said anything like that. And if you actually clicked on the headline, if you clicked and like went to look at the quote unquote article, it was just their photoshopped tweet of him that was going around. So it wasn't
an
actual tweet that he said. So that's a little tangential, but this does happen from any side of the media will do this.
That's as sinful as plagiarism or doing something absolutely fabrication and contrary
and I think,
to
like that wouldn't have spread so far if like, you know, if
people
you just
would have,
if you want to be theoretical about this, technically it started with one person sharing it, you know, not just the person who wrote it. If you would just stop that game of telephone real early, if the person, instead of just sharing the headline, clicked on it and they're like, this whole article is just the headline, like this does not look legitimate at all, then it wouldn't have gotten that far. So I would say like one of my personal steps if it's a quote itself, I will just look for the speech or the context of
that's
that
what
quote.
Same thing. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And
video is crucial. Yeah. Go to the go to the actual speech and get the context of where, because the media takes talking points and they will snip stuff out completely out of context. And if you listen to even just 5 minutes of what someone is saying, whether it's a professor or it's a, you know, an athlete or the president, you can get the real story there.
Mm-hmm. And that's why some people, you know, like to be interviewed live instead of having it recorded. Because
I think that's why you're seeing a lot of, you know, we're doing a podcast right now. I think that's why you're seeing a resurgence of what's essentially talk radio. You have a lot of long form podcasts. I know Joe Rogan, for example, has episodes that are like 3 to 4 hours long, but he'll have Bernie Sanders on there and give Bernie Sanders a complete platform to talk. Because if he's asked on a debate stage, how are you going to pay for your healthcare program? You know, he's got whatever 15 seconds to lay out his whole answer.
Is he interrupted 3 times?
Exactly. But then if you go on a podcast, a long form one, you have, you know, as much time as you need to explain it. So I think you're seeing a resurgence of that kind of media because people are tired of all the misinformation and all the lying. They just want to.
I'd like to hear that. but I don't have 3 or 4 hours to listen.
Yeah, that's true. No, I've usually got it on in the background while I'm doing something else, doing yard work or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Well, the ninth rule that I have here as we come down the list is investigate for yourself the other side of the argument or study. So if I am running into something that's really biased and I'm wondering, is it true or not? I will spend a little time investigating the other side of the argument just so that I can get, goes back to seeing the full picture, getting both sides. So that's something we've kind of talked about a lot already. Number 10, be careful of studies. I kind of mentioned this with health studies, but they can change pretty rapidly. And, it's kind of becoming a joke in some circles about the studies, because 1 month there'll be a study that says, jogging is good for your heart, and then the next month it's bad for your heart.
And what kind of study is it? How well is it conducted?
Exactly. How many people were involved? And
some studies are just getting something out of a book. They call that a study.
Yes. You know,
then they find out what somebody else
And there are lobbyists in the sugar industry or the corn industry. Lobbyists push these things. Lobbyists will do a study showing the benefits of high fructose corn syrup, how we should have it in everything. And then you don't really know that. You don't know where it's coming from. So number 10, I just have to be careful of studies. If it's a lot of people involved, then usually it's okay. But it's just something to be aware of. Number 11, we touched on this a little bit, but just watching the original videos on YouTube or government websites if possible, and just seeing what people are actually saying in their words instead of the sound bites. So that kind of ties into the first source. But just going, I kind of have a rule where I just will, if I hear someone said something, I'll just immediately go to YouTube and just watch a couple minutes of the speech. Number 12 is an interesting one. We've talked a bit about it, but on Facebook and social media, this is something that I've implemented in my own life, and it's just don't spread stuff that you haven't actually read. But 2016 study showed that 60% of people who share articles on social media are doing it without actually reading it.
Okay.
So 6 in 10 people are just sharing something in headline, like you were saying, just a headline, and they don't actually read the article.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the kind of thoughts and feelings that they prey on, because we talked in the last episode, we talked about how there are a lot of similarities to like marketing strategy when it comes to news. A lot of the thoughts and feelings that they're preying on are dangerous, because here's a local example. There's this Asian restaurant over by my apartment. And a few years ago, there was this story that was being shared all over social media about that restaurant, that someone like apparently contracted some kind of a severe sickness from the sushi and blah, blah, blah. And this was shared by everyone. And actually, I've got a friend who shared it, and I asked them why. And they're like, well, I wanted to help people. If people were getting sick from the sushi, I wanted to make sure none of my friends went. But then when that was actually investigated, it was completely false. Like, there was no one who had actually gotten sick. I don't know why it was fabricated. I don't know if it was a prank or what. But that's in a local example of, like, this business was impacted.
Yeah, but a lot of people will just share stuff, and they just will post it. I remember a couple of years ago with the Chipotle, some of the outbreaks of
was it E. coli?
Infections there. Yeah, I think it might have been. But from what I understand about it, when the truth came out, it was a couple employees who were really sick, you know, at home or at college, and then they came into work that day.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't really have anything to do with their food. I don't know all the details about it, but there's just a lot of knee-jerk reactions, and so don't spread stuff that you haven't actually read is a good thing to follow, even if it's well-intentioned. And I was just reading too about how, you know, people trust their friends and family that they would post something that's accurate. So it becomes kind of a vicious cycle, because on Facebook, people are just posting things, and then now it's in my news feed because my uncle Bob or my friend posted something, and then I trust him. Well, he wouldn't lie to me, so then I'm going to read it as if it was trustworthy. So there's a lot of different aspects to social media that just make it not the best way to get your news.
No. It was terrible.
I think we can wrap up on a couple of these final ones here. 13, we talked about it, but I generally stay away from TV news since they mostly just evolve into fight shows. They put someone on the right and someone on the left.
It's like a sports show where they've got all the talking heads.
Or a boxing match or something. Yeah. And so many of these shows on TV, these news shows are devoted to domestic issues like elections and other things. You're not really getting a very good quality of news. So it's just hard to sift through all that, and it's better. I just find it's a better use of time to stay away from most of the TV shows out there. Number 14, I have find a few journalists or thinkers or analysts that you think you can trust, you've looked into and read their work before, and then just start following them. You know, there are a few names of people that I trust as being relatively unbiased, and if I kind of lean on some of their views and their analysis, I I'm better off because I know where it's coming from, and I've kind of already vetted them in a certain way. So one of the rules that I have is just to find a few people, you know, maybe five or ten people that you can really trust, maybe not 10, but and then just follow some of those people. Mm-hmm. Number 15, just two more. 15th rule here, I've got be careful how much time you spend during the day, even just the numbers. If you do the math, if you're trying to avoid fake news and you're spending 5-6 hours a day reading the news, you're going to run into a lot of stuff. Even if you just do the math, if you read 100 articles throughout the day or skim 100 articles, there's going to be fake news in there. There's going to be really biased stuff in there. Whereas opposed to if you just do a little bit of research in the morning, do some at night, if you're just looking at a handful of articles, 5 articles from trusted sources, you're not really going to get burned by fake news. Mm-hmm. And then the last one I have is just there's what are called long form articles that are multiple pages long, and those will give you a better, fuller picture of an issue. I read one a few months ago on the heroin epidemic in America, and I learned more from that one long article, looking at the trend, looking at the causes, looking at the history of opium. I learned more from that than I learned from 10, 15, 20 other little articles combined, because it painted the full picture of the problem. And it wasn't
more of a feature article.
Yeah, it was a feature article, probably 6 or 7 pages long, and just really painted the full picture. And it wasn't in a biased way. It wasn't promoting an agenda. It was really an educational service that the author was doing to say, here's the problem. Here's what's happening. So oftentimes long form articles are a good way to really understand a topic if you're trying to understand it. So hopefully people will find some of these things helpful. These are just the ones that I use, and there's more that other people have that are effective. But it truly is the Wild West out there with the fake news online and the internet and all the social media tools. Instagram, there's news on Instagram now, news feeds, and I'm sure TikTok will be the same thing. There'll be news articles there. Hopefully people will find some of these things helpful, and I think it was definitely interesting to get to delve into some of these issues in a deeper way.
Yes, and I do believe that, having more information does not mean that you have the truth.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a time when everybody is speaking, less people are listening. Mm-hmm. That fragmentation has led to understanding less, I do believe.
Yes.
So anyway, Justin, thank you so much for being on Inside United. You had very good points for us to think about, and we always enjoy you here as a guest.
Thank you.
So thanks for joining us on Inside United. Please tell your friends about Inside United. You can find us very easily on the ucg.org website. Go to the main menu bar and click or tap on the podcast button. Use your favorite Android or Apple podcasting app, such as Pocket Caster for me on Android. Also, we'd like to hear from you. If you could write to us at podcast@ucg.org, we'd love to hear about your thoughts about this program and also give us suggestions about future programs. So thank you for joining us. Come back again soon for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.